What is up, guys? We are back. I know it's been a while since you heard my wonderful voice. As always, I am Shu, but not as always. I'm with a friend of mine known as B-Blues. What's going on, B-Blues?
Right to be here.
Yeah. It's prestigious to be on the Fireman Shrine podcast, no doubt. I'm sure you've been waiting for this moment all your life.
Every boy's dream.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Blazer is out doing something. I don't know. I didn't ask, but he is not available at this moment in time. So yeah. Last week I mentioned that we're gonna be bringing on some new characters, new individuals for this finale podcast. And excuse me while I list off your credentials, B-Blues. Longtime forum member on FES. Part-time staff member, did a very good job there, if I do say so myself. I guess you can say, it's fair to say that if you're a longtime member of the Fire Emblem community, you probably know a thing or two about Fire Emblem. Am I correct in making that assumption?
I'd say it's pretty correct. I did a fair amount of them.
Right. So, again, if you didn't listen to the podcast last week, basically what we're going to be doing is I'm just going to kind of recap all the topics that we talked about this season, except I'm going to get a fresh look at all these things, I guess. So hopefully B-Blues doesn't have all the same opinions that Blazer and I did, or else it'll be really boring, right?
Get a European feel on this.
European feel. See, that's very important because, let's be honest, I think the general consensus is that people like listening to the English accent far more than they like listening to, you know, a couple of Midwest punks like Blazer and I, Night States losers. I guess we should roll right into it. First episode we talked about plot, and I remember I was saying that I kind of longed for the days of Fire Emblem 4 and 5, when the plots were a little bit darker, a little bit more interesting that way. I was kind of down on the Awakenings storyline, I guess. Maybe I was a little bit too harsh. That's kind of been a running joke of this season, actually, is that we kind of gave the impression that we didn't like Awakening when that was totally not the case.
I think Awakening had that sort of issue where, like, it came out and everyone was just like, it's back. Got it, you know, all these sales. There was the hype, the year, Game of the Year awards and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And then immediately after comes all the criticism, like, hang on, this isn't a Game of the Year. But, I mean, well, I thought it was a pretty, probably one of the best release titles that year. We had to wait a little longer. But, I agree, though, that some of the plot lines, like 4 and 5, while only I've actually managed to get through them once, they both had, like, great sort of plot. Compared to, especially the later ones, where it kind of did get a bit, cheesy in some of them.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I know what you mean, man. Like, I feel like it cheesy, and also they kind of fell into, you know, these archetypical plot lines and character schemes. Like,
yeah.
Like, each and every story, it was new, it was fresh to a degree, but you still kind of felt like this is definitely Fire Emblem. There's definitely some inspiration in the
they all fall into certain parts. Like, I mean, outside of 9 and 10, all of them are a lord. All of them are sort of got their, like, start off with their nice little band of lords, and even then 9, you become a lord. You can't really get away from that sort of part of it, but no, yeah. I mean, I like it, especially the later one, Awakening, did like the whole, well, few sections of the part of the story which are sort of glossed over. The whole Valm part.
Oh, yep.
Like, it was like, oh, I'm invading, and they kind of just said, okay, we've won a few key battles, and never really got much of a feel for the whole section.
Yeah, see, one thing I think, I don't know if I said this in a previous episode or not, but the feeling that I kind of got from Awakening was that, like, It didn't feel like the world really existed. It felt like the only important thing that was happening on those two continents was where Krom was at that point in time. Like, I didn't get the feeling that there was anything else going on in that world. They didn't really paint it very well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, even, I guess, like, the first ones you play, like, I think my first two were 7 and 6.
Yeah.
But like, so they had the little bits between chapters, and they were saying, oh, well, okay, Roy's gone and helping out in Ostia, but meanwhile in Etruria or whatever, there's all this civil war going down. And they didn't mention anything about Valm until it just suddenly happened. Then Virion pops up and says, hey, there's a whole continent at war. And
War on you. Yeah, it's like, it was almost surreal. Like, I thought that was like an intentional thing, is that they decided, nah, we don't want anything interesting to be happening unless it's happening to Crom.
Yeah. I guess sometimes that kind of thing, like, because it was so streamlined, it really made, I guess, it much more accessible.
Yeah,
I think that might have been part of it. Like, I mean,
that's what Blazer said.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely more accessible. And, I mean, I don't know how much it contributed to the game's success, because, I mean, it's pretty successful, or if it was mainly the gameplay, but, you know, whatever, I guess.
I mean, it's just some of those things, like, a lot of, sometimes people will, like, be like, oh, it's heavily story-driven. I know, like, a lot of my friends are like, oh, I don't want anything to do with that.
No.
They would like say a Fire Emblem where it was just like, every level was just, oh, defend this point or go here without a story. And you're like, well, that's not what makes it charming in that sense.
Right. So, what would you say is your favorite storyline in the Fire Emblem series?
Well, I mean, if I try and keep my nostalgia goggles off as much as possible, I'd probably say 4 and 5 definitely had the best whole, because I guess in the sense it was 2 books, and I mean, even compared to 6 and 7, like, it completely trumps them.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think I said the same thing. I'm like, what was so interesting about Fire Emblem 4 is that everybody was like almost related to each other, and just kind of like people hail from and what their lineage is was very important, and that really kind of painted the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, and also that had a really good feel, and in actual like medieval Europe, that sort of like in France, all the families were related, and so like all these marriages and stuff were like, oh yeah, she's like your brother's sister's cousin, but you can marry her. And so all the families were very closely tied together.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm a little bit of I really dig European history. I know there was a point in time, kind of like in 8th, 9th century, where pretty much one family controlled most of Western Europe.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that sort of feel you get from like 4 and 5 is very sort of, wow, this could be a sort of medieval times, and it feels like that, while everyone is very sort of now, like, I guess, like, 6 and 7 had a bit of relationship because Lycia was all kind of, oh, yeah, we're all descended from, like, Roland and a couple of them.
Right.
Not nowhere near the same sort of scale.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd probably say after the, I guess, outside of those two, I enjoyed playing 9 the first time. Had a couple of sort of slavery and racism on the tone, but it really 4 and 5 were probably the peak for that.
Yeah, see, I'm definitely in agreement. I think that one kind of, like, I guess, thing I keep in mind whenever I'm, I guess, absorbing a new story, be it a book or a game or a TV show or something, is, do I get the impression that this world that they created existed before the story started, and will it keep on going after the story started? And if I get a really good idea about, a really good sense of, like, history to it, I think that's a sign of, like, a really deep story, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think it's
like Awakening, where, like, even if you know the kids are coming from the future, you're kind of like, well, it just all suddenly becomes, and they all live happily ever after.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the thing, is that you got these kids coming from the future, but even, I mean, their time apparently wasn't interesting enough, so they came back in time for something that already happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so they kind of, like, they touched on it, but then they wrecked it. So, like, Fire Emblem 4 definitely does that the best because it has the multi-generational thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, even had, like, 5 was technically just, like, a whole side story that went on at the same time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was crazy. It was crazy. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those ones where you wish they just translated it and maybe put it, I don't know, on Virtual Console or whatever, but
yeah, you can hope, right?
Oh, we can dream.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we're still waiting for everything here.
In my dreams, I play a localized version of Fire Emblem 4. So, next topic, I guess we should just jump right into, unless, of course, you had something else that you wanted to say about plot.
Nothing that's past what's been said already, I don't think.
Right, okay. So I want to ask you, do you play a lot of Smash Brothers?
I played a fair bit. I mean, okay. I wouldn't say I'm very competitive or anything, but...
Nah, I'm not either. Yeah, I think most people have played Smash Brothers to a degree, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah. I'm better than all my friends. I know, like, I'll go up against someone who's actually good at it, and I'll just lose.
Oh, right. Dude, I'm kind of the same way. Except good amongst my friends. I'm not that. I'm terrible at the game.
It's still fun.
So, yeah. So the second topic for the second episode, Blazer and I talked about, you know, our favorite crossover fighting series, Super Smash Brothers, and what we think the future of Fire Emblem in it is, you know.
Yeah.
So, we kind of also talked about the Project M mod for Brawl, which, I mean, I don't think we should go over again because that's boring,
sure,
in my opinion. But, so I guess I should just start off by asking you.
Characters and stuff, or?
Yeah. I'll ask. Let's be formal about this. What do you think? I mean, who do you see as the two Fire Emblem characters? I'm going to assume there's two. In the next Super Smash Bros. Game, we know Martha's in there.
Yeah, Martha is definitely staying. He's already in.
Yeah, he's already in.
I've got a feeling it's probably going to be Crom. I think, given the game's success worldwide, they're probably going to. Either they keep Ike and put Crom in, or they're going to just replace Ike with Crom. Because, again, he's, like, even in the, I mean, the cutscenes, he probably doesn't need much of a moveset change. I remember that one cutscene when he fights Lucina. He does his little spin that looks a hell of a lot like Aether in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of thing. But he's probably, I'd say he's a lock. And maybe an alternate costume might be just sticking a mask on his face, and they'll be like, oh... Even if he's the same height.
Yeah. It is a nod to Awakening. And you know, I think one of the best pieces of evidence for Crom's inclusion, entry into the series is that Arena Fenrix stage.
Oh yeah.
Was seen in some of the screenshots for the 3DS version, I think. So I mean.
And it's actually now that's an actually an arena that is based in the game.
Yeah, exactly. A generic stage.
Just the castle.
Yeah. It wasn't Castle Siege. It was actually a reference to that game. So I'm thinking that means Crom is probably going to get in instead of Ike. I really don't think he's back.
No, I think also Ike, again, kind of had that sort of Martha Roryfield where I remember a lot of people I knew who used to play and they'd be like, who the hell is this guy again? I mean, he's cool. He's got a sword. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those games sold poorly here.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that one of the biggest reasons for Ike's inclusion, that's the word I was looking for, thank you very much. One of the biggest reasons for his inclusion was the fact that those games were coming. What year did Path of Radiant Dawn come out?
Was it 08? I think it was 08.
Well, either way, it was like within a year of Smash Bros. Brawl release, so I'm thinking that was kind of the same reason why Roy was in Melee is because he had a new game coming out, and Crom has a game that's fairly recent, so I mean, I think it just makes more sense, unless of course they announce another Fire Emblem title include whoever the hero of that game is, but I mean, I don't think we're that lucky. Yeah, dude, that'd be great. I'll be honest, that would catch me off guard.
I would go out and buy the copy on release just for that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, are you getting the next Smash Bros. Game?
I'm probably getting it for the 3DS. The thing is, I don't have a Wii U at the moment.
No, that's...
Not being convinced enough to buy one.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think I've talked about this before. I think most people are going to buy I definitely think that the new Smash Bros. Game will sell Wii Us, but for the most part, I think people are going to be picking it up for the 3DS. I myself am probably going to get both. I don't care how much my wallet screams in pain, but I do happen to have a Wii U. My brother got one for Christmas, so I have access to that. So I can. I also have a 3DS, so I can play
Yeah.
both of it.
Like
Both
both at
of
the same time somehow.
both at the same time. I'm that interested. I'm that into
Yeah.
it.
I mean, I'll probably buy a Wii U down the line at some point, but right now, I mean, I don't have any of the new consoles. So I'm waiting for the price to drop a bit, maybe a couple more games to come out.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I get I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast before, but I do ha I have like I mentioned that we have a Wii U. I didn't pay for that, but I did pay for a PS4 and an Xbox One. So
Oh, God.
yeah, I do. It was, I mean, and I'll be honest, not a whole lot of games out. That's the truth of it. So I haven't been playing them that much. But every time somebody like insults me about it, I'm like, it's not. Like, I'll admit, I have not got my $1,000 worth out of it quite yet, but it's an investment. Down the line, once the games start coming out, then it'll be worth it. Then it'll be
Yeah,
worth
and you think if the machines out, I mean, these machines now, like the Wii's been out for how long?
it. I don't know.
Eight years? 6 years? Whatever. I mean,
It's been
like
quite a while.
you say you pay 200, well, for the £300, so what, $500 or whatever. Like over that amount of time, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm waiting to see what they release because at the moment it's just, oh, you know, here's a game you've already played on the GameCube, but HD. That's
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Speaking
Yeah,
of
so
like
when
new games on the new consoles, this is kind of a tangent from Fire Emblem, I guess. I was recently playing Titanfall Beta, which I thought was only gonna be all right, but that game is really fun. So if you have an Xbox and you wanna get into beta, go do it. It's
Yeah,
fun.
I've got friends going on about that.
Yeah,
It's
it's fun. It's fun.
yeah. Right.
And let me tell you, the guys got. I really like. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast before either, but I really dig accents that aren't from America for whatever reason. Like I like
It's a
American
rarity
accents.
in dubs. It's such a and like, or even actually in English games, like a lot of them are still American the whole way through.
Yeah, no, like.
I mean, I don't. I'm not complaining. I mean, I never really outside of that don't hear much American accents. So for me, it's kind of novel, but.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I get you, but like, I really, I love Scottish, Irish, English, Welsh, I guess, Australian, English. I love those accents, but I hate accents from within my own country.
Right.
Like, I mean, I like the Midwest accent because I'm from the Midwest of the United States of America, but I can't stand the Southern accent. It's just so annoying to me. Just drives me
Yeah.
absolutely insane.
I guess it kind of like it grinds on you after a bit.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I mean, I've, to be honest, yeah, like here, I mean, I still find the Scottish accent and the Welsh accent great. Although the Welsh accent more for terms of it just sounds quite funny, but.
See, that's what it is. Like the Welsh accent, like you like the, I mean, as somebody not from the United Kingdom, you like the English and the Scottish accent mostly because, well, the Scottish accent just because it's gruff and it's
Yeah,
kind of
there's no way it is not.
Coolly intimidating for whatever reason. And, you know, English accent, obviously, everybody considers classy. But the Welsh accent is just like, ha ha ha, that's funny, dude. Get a Welsh
Yeah.
accent.
Well, I mean, I played what was on the PS Ni No Kuni or whatever, that Studio Ghibli game,
Oh,
and
yeah?
like what like your companion for the whole game is Welsh, and it's
Oh,
like,
really?
and so the whole time he talks, he's just like struggling to keep a straight face, and it's like. Did they really have to get this? But no, I mean
No,
I'd like to see it more. I guess though it's like inside a game like Fire Emblem, like they're moving more towards voicing stuff. Maybe they'd throw in some stuff there. Because at the moment it is, I think. Isn't it a whole cast of American actors VAs for
I think
voicing?
so. I think
Yeah, but
so.
then again, that's like most games.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I would like to see more because I mean, I know we were kind of talking about parallels between Fire Emblem and kind of medieval Europe. I would totally like to see more English accents or something like that because I'm a big I don't I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. I read the books and I
Yeah.
also watch the show, and that's an American production. All of the actors are from the UK, so
Yeah, that is one of those things where I was like watching it. I was like, oh, this is surprising.
yeah. It's on HBO. I think the only American actor might be Peter Dinklage, who pretty much speaks in an English accent for whatever reason. Anyway, he's from New Jersey or something, somewhere from New England. But like, he still has that accent. He still talks a little bit like he belongs in the UK, which is really cool. So yeah, I think it would be cool to kind of see that, to see a little bit change in voice direction, I suppose.
Yeah, but you never know. I mean, like, it's one of the things where when games do it, you take notice, but it's only because it's now so sort of unique when they're not doing it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, even like it was like one of those things when I remember playing Modern Warfare, the first time, and it was like SAS and all this, and you're like, oh no, they actually are speaking in English as opposed to, oh, they're all English, but you can tell they're putting on accents.
Right.
Anyway.
So yeah. Next topic. I guess I don't know how much we're gonna talk about this one, because I don't know how qualified either of us are. The third podcast we talked about like farm modding, you know, hacking, which is kind of a big part of the farming community, right?
Oh yeah, no, like that. I think without a lot of the hacking, there wouldn't be much of a community at times outside of say the GameFAQs and Reddit.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, you can make the argument that that's what's kept a lot of these sites, I mean, I guess not a lot, but some of these remaining Fire Emblem websites afloat, because right now, would you say the only ones that really are alive are probably ours, Fire Emblem Shrine, Sarada's Forest, and anything else? I think it's just us two, maybe?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think Serenade is probably the only one that could even, I think when you take away hacking, might be self-sufficient, but even then I doubt it. Like, you take away that, people are like, well, why would I go away from the massive sites?
Exactly. I mean, that's with a game series like Fire Emblem, when you don't really get a whole lot of information all the time, it's very, we're sort of grateful that that they went to the GBA, and now so easy to, you know, get into and hack and keep the same material fresh for so long. Because when you think about it, the last GBA Fire Emblem game was released 1,000 years ago. I don't remember when Sacred Stones came out. Was it like 2004 or something?
Yeah, it was late, but I guess late into the, like, 2000s.
Yeah, now it's 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, like, because people can keep on, like, reimagining stuff, they keep it. I mean, the first time I ever came to FPS was to look at trying to get into it. Never happened, but...
Yeah, no, I think if you're part of the FE community online, you probably have tried to get into hacking at one point or another, at least opened up the guide that Blazer wrote.
Yeah, I remember opening up Nightmare, and I was just like,
nah. It's like, for a lot of people, I think you just realize it's too much work, and then you're like, I'm just going to make smart-ass posts and stuff.
Yeah.
Are you about statistics?
Yeah, it's almost like a little like investment in itself, and just pure time and effort. And then, you know, maybe on Saturday, it's like someone's just going to call you out and say, it's crap, and then you're just like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah, no, definitely. So yeah, I guess we shouldn't talk too much about hacking, or else we're going to make ourselves look like idiots.
Yeah. I played a few, I enjoyed them.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, obviously, important part of the community, but we're not exactly qualified to talk about it. So we'll get back to that topic sometime next season, probably. So the next thing we should talk about is DLC in Fire Emblem. And I guess, B-Blues, what is your viewpoint on DLC in general, I guess?
Now, I think despite the amount of times Blazer said that I probably should try at least one of them, I've yet to actually download any of the DLC for this one. Not out of sort of, oh, it's too much or all this, but I think actually I probably should download, there was one which they were like, oh, it's got story and stuff in it, but I don't know. I guess I moved on to some other games at the same time. I just got my 3DS, but like, looking back at some of it, I remember looking at some gameplay from, I think it was the, I don't know how you spell it, the Apotheosis or whatever.
Yeah,
like, and it just looked like, oh, look at all of these. Look how much grinding you need to do. And it's like, I didn't, like, pick up FE to grind it any more than I would ever need to. I mean, I guess outside Awakening, and Sacred Stones, you never really get the chance to, unless your arena abuse, but.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what do you, what, I mean, but have you purchased DLC? I mean, or do you
I
usually
purchased
purchase
DLC
DLC?
for a lot of other stuff. Like, I mean, I
Yeah.
purchased the DLC for the story for the Phoenix Wright,
Yeah.
the Eternity one. Like, I purchased that last week. I mean, I guess then again, that was enjoyable for however long that took me. But it's one of those things where you really have to, you've got to realize, what am I actually paying for here? Am I paying because I really enjoy this game? I just can't get enough of the gameplay. Is it for a piece of story that I might be interested in? Because I think some of them were like, oh, here, the I think it wasn't like the EXP one, and there was the gold one, this one,
Yeah.
and I was like, I'm not after playing it just to clear sometimes maps they've just made to, I guess, mess about on.
Exactly. It's definitely one of those things where you kind of got to pick and choose which ones you buy. Because I know when they first started coming out with DLC, I was really stoked because I'm actually I kind of really like DLC for games that I like. I'll pick up a lot of different things. I'm a big fan of the Mass Effect series, which has a
Oh,
lot
it
of
has tons
DLC.
of DLC. I
Tons
bought
of
all of it.
DLC. Oh yeah, no, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a while after Awakening came out, I was picking up the DLC every week, because I mean it was only a few bucks initially, so you just buy a
Yeah.
map and then play through it. But it eventually got to the point where like I kind of stopped buying them because I wasn't that interested anymore, But I think despite that, I think there's a lot of room for new things with DLC. I think the next Fire Emblem game could probably do DLC a lot better and probably
I
would
think,
sell
yeah,
more.
I think looking at some of the DLC, like, you could really expand on it. I think being able to just make a few maps, I get not necessarily, well, in their spare time or in post-production, make some challenging maps even. Doesn't have to be story done, I guess. I mean, for those who just like the difficulty of trying to overcome all of these odds or whatever, maybe throw in some defend maps. That was nice. That would be nice. But, that sort of thing. And yeah, and I think a lot of people would just go off and buy it. I mean, I'm still tempted to buy it every now and again when I look at the game, but yeah, I think it's definitely, it's one of those games now where they've opened the door up and you realize, hang on, we can get this to go. I
Oh
mean,
yeah,
if people even
absolutely.
bought the ones for like, with well, the new style old FE characters or whatever.
Oh yeah, no. See, I would love that. Yeah, I think I would like to see, 'cause something that I don't think is talked about a lot, those old BS Fire Emblem challenge things.
Right.
I would like, I mean,
Oh, you mean
potentially
like which ones, the challenge maps
like the
or?
challenge maps where you
Oh,
had
yeah.
like usually a bunch of Pegasus knights and fight some archers or something like that. It was pretty hardcore.
Yeah, like I think like FE9 had that. I think 6 had that, didn't it? Where you
Yeah,
could like,
it did.
yeah, because I
Yeah.
remember trying the FE9 ones. And I was like, hang on, this is pretty fun, but and now yeah, now you're paying for it, but at the same time, it's not too much. It's not. It's only what, £2, £3 most.
No, I would like to see. Furthermore, I mean, on the topic of DLC, I'm like, what if we, I guess, what if there was a DLC where it tells the story of something else that happened during the main game? I know, like, we talked about how, though sometimes the Fire Emblem games don't really flesh out their worlds a whole lot. I think if you had DLC that told, like, maybe just like a collection of like maybe five chapters or just like a handful of chapters that told the story of something that happened elsewhere in the world while you were playing the main game, I think that could be like that's some damn good DLC, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of like taking another BioWare game, Dragon Age.
Oh,
The
yeah.
Dragon Age Awakening was almost like, okay, that was a semi-sequel, but like taking a whole area of the game and just, while it's not as long, it's just like a DLC package, just an entire different story. It's got nothing to do with the original one. It's just like, oh, afterwards, this is going on. But if they did it inside, so say, yeah, say for FEA, while you're going through the first part, there's a side story where you're at. Where you're in Valm and you're, say, Sayri or whatever, trying to fight back. And then
Yeah.
it doesn't even have to end in a sort of super duper happy way. They could make a dark side plot.
Yeah, yeah, I really like that kind of thing. I've always thought that dark stories hit a lot harder and are thus generally better. I mean, maybe that's just me. So I know I've
I think
met people that
if it's
don't share that opinion.
no, if it's done well, I mean, if you can just get a story to do well, I do hate sometimes when a game really looks like it shouldn't be having a Disney ending, and a Disney ending happens through
Oh
whatever
yeah,
reason, the power of
definitely.
friendship or
Oh
something.
God, garbage, right? Yeah, I know. I
Yeah,
can't stand listening to that stuff. It's just
but
not
yeah.
realistic. I guess my imagination is going away because I like things that I can believe, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you can, even if it's in a fancy world, if the story is believable, then that will get people to like enjoy it.
Oh yeah. No,
I
see,
guess.
I've always thought that that would help. It gets people more invested when, I mean, the characters aren't just these like perfect beacons of light that are just
Yeah.
heroes in every way, shape, and form. I like it when there's like a little bit more personal demons, a little bit more inner strife, a little bit more, you know, depth to all these characters, and that's something that you don't really see in Fire Emblem.
Yeah, and even the song, like, I mean, I remember playing Alan Wake, and like, even though the story wasn't top notch the whole way through, the ending, he might have saved his wife, but then like, he's still not saved, and he's stuck at the bottom of the lake or whatever. But that's
Oh
spoilers if you haven't played Alan Wake. But yeah,
yeah.
like that sort of thing, where even if it's like not necessarily like a grim and grisly ending, it's sort of just like that you could he did like sacrifice himself to save his wife, and it's like, well, at least they're both not alive now, in a sort
Yeah.
of. It's
Yeah.
just different, and it's nice to have different as long as different works.
Yeah, right. I mean, if every single plot line ends with somebody dying, then, you know, it gets predictable at that point. I mean, then you've got
Yeah.
a whole other slew of issues with your storytelling.
I guess it's like in a Fire Emblem game, there's always like one guy who's like sort of good and then just ends up dying. I find a lot of the time, like, it's not even necessarily like it's a good guy, but it's like also something like awesome betrays you, or oh, Mustafa's really nice, and then you have to kill him because he's a good guy, but he's just fighting for the wrong team and all this sort of. Like that tends, I feel like that happens quite a bit.
Oh yeah, no. So yeah, let's move on. Next topic. I know we're on a marathon of Fire Emblem related topics. We're just cruising. So I in podcast 5 we put a little bit pressure on the GBA era of the Fire Emblem game. So I think we talked about in that episode that it's considered by some Fire Emblem fans to be maybe the golden era of the Fire Emblem franchise, and whether or not that's true and how it holds up to the rest of the series. So, what's your take on that?
I think you could say it's definitely the golden era in the sense that it's finally got localized to the West, that sort of thing. And people, that's, I guess it's the golden era that people first started to actually play it. And I guess nostalgia runs, definitely runs heavy.
Oh yeah, definitely.
No qualms. Like, say, I remember if someone said, oh, what's your favorite one? I'd probably, before thinking about it, say Seven without giving much thought of reason why, because Seven didn't do anything more than any of the other games. It didn't have the best story. Probably not the best gameplay, but it was probably my first one. And that's like, oh yeah, must be the. And also, I guess all the hacking and stuff that came in, like that was when the community, like in the West, definitely, the communities for the whole game started getting big. And when it went to 9 and 10, it started to die down because not many people bought it, whatever. And then it kind of comes back in waves. I feel like.
No, what were
Yeah.
you saying?
And no, I was going to say that, like, on the whole, I'd say it's the golden era just because it's the most popular sort of selection of them at the time. Like, I think that's when it hit its mainstream
Right, exactly.
more
I
than
think
anything else.
it's kind of, I think the GBA era is great for the same reason that Final Fantasy VII is considered a great game. Not necessarily because it's the best game in that genre or that franchise, but because of what it did for that game slash franchise's popularity.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of that's probably what it is. It's the PS1 era Final Fantasy when it had four games that came out. You can debate on whether, say, like, oh, six is better than seven and all this crap, but like that was when everyone started to stand up and take notice and say, hang on, we're buying this in its loads and we're going to give it good reviews and all this. Like, I think now, I mean, I would say that eight is probably one of my least favorite of the newest ones. And set and well, I guess six had its problems. Hard mode with all those guys popping up like bad mechanics.
Yeah.
When enemy turn was something I used to fear. But I think, yeah, it's definitely, I'd definitely put it down to the Gold Matrix because that's when it became big.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's when, I know that's when I got into the games.
And it had the, I guess, had the most memorable in the sense that, like, with Roy appearing the first time on Melee and Emerald, like, where the hell is this? And then Ellie, would people remember the not being Roy? And then, you know.
That's why he's remembered for not being Roy.
Well, I mean, yeah. But
no, that's a good way of putting it.
While people then, like, it had, say, even one memorable Lord. I mean, people talk about the Hector like he's, well, he should be in the games. He's not even the main character. Sort of stuff like that, but makes it popular. I guess no one was really saying anything about, well, that's because none of us knew about it before then. I wouldn't have known about Fire Emblem past Roy if I'd never played Fire Emblem 7.
It's true.
Which I didn't know was 7. Like,
yeah, I knew, I thought it was Fire Emblem 1.
Yeah.
That didn't have the right main character in it or something.
Yeah, you got into, like, it was just one of those things, you like, you start the game up and you're not even the guy who's not Roy. He's, it was one of those things where I think that's, yeah, I don't know what gets in the end got me into it. I only heard of the name because, again, of Melee.
Yeah.
But I guess a lot of people did.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of those people. I thought, because, I mean, Roy became my favorite character in Melee just because, I don't know, he was interesting. Because he had a sword. He had a sword, but he wasn't Link. And I had no, and he had, like, this mystery about him. And there was this other guy named Marth there. Had no idea what his story was. They talked in Japanese. It's crazy. It was crazy. And I was just so interested. That's eventually just, you know, forced me to pick up one of the GBAs. And that's...
I won't even lie. I remember just, like, my dad, who used to play a lot of games, he was just like, oh, here, look at this. And he had a computer just full of ROMs. I have no idea why. All these GBA games, I mean, and Fire Emblem was there, and I just picked it out because I was like, oh yeah, isn't that what Roy's from? And then you open it up and you start playing, and then my parents couldn't get me away from the computer, and then eventually I went out and bought the game. But
yeah,
like, yeah, I think that's definitely just one of those things that it's probably, yeah, nostalgic. They're not the best games, but they're your first games, and that's why it is the golden era, especially when you're adding things like, oh yeah, I've got to go find out how to play FE6, got to go find my translation patches.
Yeah. I mean, that was the, Fire Emblem 6 was actually the first game that I ever emulated, and I remember I was just so stoked because, I mean, like I said, Roy was my favorite character in Smash Brothers, and, I mean, I was disappointed that I couldn't play the game because it was in Japanese, and then I remember Marth the Altian Prince, or known as Soviet Comrade, known as Lucia the Rebellion on the forums, Dan Romanko, he walked me through how to patch and play Fire Emblem 6 on an emulator. And I just remember that was like one of the greatest days of my entire life. I'm like, oh my god, this game never came out in America, but I'm playing it in English on my computer. This is crazy!
That was like the first game I'd ever sort of played that was like fan translated or anything. I thought I was like getting some forbidden fruit.
Yeah, definitely. There was some, definitely like the forbidden fruit aspect to that. So, moving on past the GBA era, let's turn our eyes to the future. I'm gonna ask you, next Fire Emblem game, what do you want it to be? You want it to be completely new game, new world, new everything, or do you want it to be a remake, or do you want it to be a new game but still tie into one of the older games?
Well, firstly, as a European who hasn't got the Shin Megami Tensei 4 has still not come out here. I hope that it actually just comes out in Europe.
But, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, except for the crossover.
What I'm hoping is, I'm hoping that they find a balance between what is now FEA and the older FEs, because it's nice, but it was very slimmed down, you know, I feel, and that made it popular. I think that's going to be their point of contention with the newer ones.
Yeah,
I want to see they take some of these mechanics they've got now from the new one. They've really done a good job with the sort of, like, they brought the skills that were in and out in some of the older games. And then I'm not sure about the team up. I loved it when it first came out, and then I realized, well, half the chapters you are just teaming up with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the reduction in game modes, it was always just get rid of everyone. no defend, no seize. But I'd like to see, so yeah, a mix. Which I'd like to see them take some of the older stuff and put it back in. And yes, I'd love to see a new world. I feel like, oh, this was cool. All the worlds are apparently connected, blah, blah, blah. But I'd like to see something new. I've got a feeling that they're going to look at the success of the Awakening and say, well, people are liking this, and then they're going to bring out something that's very similar to Awakening, which isn't bad. I mean,
yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'll still play it.
Yeah, definitely. But I'd like to see if just them taking a few changes here and there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely like it. I mean, again, I think the general consensus is that everybody kind of wants to see a new world, new characters. I think that's always kind of been the case. But I would be lying if I said I wasn't inkling for a little bit more action on my favorite continent, Jugdral. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just something that ties into those games.
Yeah. Or just even if, I mean, if they're going to make anyone try and get something closer, I mean, that's, I think if they do make a new world, it's just please expand on it a bit more. But maybe I've got to think that's my main worry, is that they just won't expand on the parts that were lacking this time around.
Exactly.
Like story.
Yeah, no, I mean, I mean, either that or something. I don't think I mentioned this when we talked about it in podcast 6, but I think what would be cool would be is if they somehow tied the two continents together. Not like they did in Fire Emblem Awakening, because we already know that.
Those were the continents from 1 and 3 and 2, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was. I think they were originally called Acania, of course, and Valencia, or Valencia, or whatever.
Yeah.
Translation you downloaded. But they were already connected in the world. Like, I mean, I'm talking, for an example, see Alib and Magvel somehow connected, you know? Somehow drawn together plot-wise.
I feel like in the game they seem to imply that like all of these worlds are actually in the same world, which is because I guess like Magvel was like, oh, there's a huge stretch of water that no one can cross because it's just one big continent. It looked like it was just a big island.
Right.
It's crazy. They made it sound like when they were talking about, oh, yeah, all these worlds are connected, it sounded like every place in each game was just like a really big version of Australia. So just really big continents floating and no land anywhere near each other. Which is just kind of like, oh, that's just that's too easy to say. I mean, yeah, I'd love to see it because I'm sure people are gonna be like, oh, let's have another one of these where it's Tellius when at the end of 10, it's like I travelled across to lands unknown. It's like, well, is this land unknown the place in FE13 because there's Priam? And it's like, well, not really. They're probably just again making stuff up. I think it would be nice to see if there was like a connection, but I don't think there is. As for remakes and stuff, people always want to see like, oh, what about the life of the seven heroes? No, don't want to hear about
it.
Oh,
absolutely not. I remember we actually talked about this in previous podcasts as well, that just how many hacks do you think were started with the intention of telling the story of the heroes from Alib?
It's one of those things where, like, you play and you're just like, oh, tell me more. And it's like, but there's nothing to say. They, especially, like, in 6 when they basically just say, actually, they wrecked the world. Which, that would be a good point for a bad story. But, I mean, it's not really what I'd like to see. Or someone like, oh, what about the time when FE9, before all of that started? Again, no, that still doesn't really work. I'd rather them make it a whole new thing as opposed to prequeling, or even with some of them sequeling.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, for like, I could see 9 and 10 coming out in HD re-releases on the Wii U. I wouldn't be up for really buying them unless they changed anything, because again, 10 had, I feel, great sort of chapter split up and all that. Awful sort of no supports and some of the stuff got a bit.
Yeah, I'm with you on Fire Emblem 10. I was not overly impressed, and like you, I probably would not pick up a remake if they did come out with one. This conversation's actually got me interested in wondering like what the chronology is. Like, if all these worlds really are tied together, which what happened first?
I'm pretty sure they did like release something somewhere, and it
really.
I think so. or one of the guys behind the game said it, but it really does just, when you like look at it, you're like, well, I don't believe you. You just said this now.
I don't believe you. Yeah. I really, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like at the end of, whatever, it's like Final Fantasy X, when they're like, oh, there's a guy called Shinra, and he was talking about harvesting energy. And then the guy was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure in hundreds of thousands of years, he ended up going to the world of Final Fantasy VII. It's like, don't say that. Don't. Just don't.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, maybe Nintendo should come out with like something for Fire Emblem, kind of like the Radiant Historia for Legend of Zelda, tells like the timeline.
Oh, well, like they did for Zelda, yeah.
Yeah, an official timeline, that'd be rad.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'd be like something like Marth was first, and then just I don't know, because the continents look completely different.
Yeah.
Oh well, I don't know.
Maybe there's a lot of continental shift.
Oh god. The geography was crazy. No, I would love to see them actually just make something new, and just if they can try and just improve on what is now a financially working formula.
Exactly. I mean, like we discussed, I really hope they expand on that, and so we get a little bit more insight into just how all of these things are tied together.
Yeah.
And so the last topic, I guess. We're going to discuss today. I know everybody's groaning because that means that the podcast will be ending shortly for the season. And
I'll have nothing to listen to on the way to work.
Oh, that's unfortunate. maybe something that isn't terrible. No. This podcast is great. Chapter goals, most recent topic, you listened to that on February 5th, if you're a really big fan and you got it right away, when it released. Basically, we kind of talked about what was, at that point, we talked about what was new with Nintendo, so I mean, that's old news now, so we're not even going to bother with that, but we also talked about chapter goals in Fire Emblem and how they didn't, like, there's a lot of different chapter types throughout the series, but Awakening in particular, bashing Awakening again, even though totally not intentional, they didn't use a whole lot of different types. It was either rout the enemy or seize the throne. I don't think they used any other chapter types.
I don't think they used seize the throne. Didn't they just use kill the commander?
Oh, did they? You might be right, actually.
I think it was just either like kill everyone or just kill the commander. I don't remember seizing anything.
That's right. I think you're right. You're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Return to Seize the Throne, even if Seize the Throne, to most people who ended up playing too much Fire Emblem, wants just kill everyone, loot all the chests, and sit on the throne while you build your support cell.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's what I did.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things, like, the first time through, you were just like, oh, crap, get Marcus to the throne, but nowadays, once you start playing a few of them, it does become kill everyone. But some of them, I think, like, in 9, there was the escape, I think, and there was in 5 as well.
Yeah, 5 I think started it, but the thing with 5 was that when you escaped, anybody that was left behind died, so you couldn't use
it. Yeah, that was it. That was on the screen.
That was a headache. I remember there's something really funny to me is when people first start playing Fire Emblem 5 and they never played it before, and then they don't realize that's how escape chapters work. I remember Blazer almost left the chapter with just with Leaf before I told him. That, yeah, everybody's got to escape or else they're going to be dead. And let me tell you, Fire Emblem 5, not a game you want to solo with Leaf.
Yeah, that was one, I did that once, not just Leaf, but like, I had Leaf and one or two others, and then I was just, because I'd been playing FE9, where escape is just like, one guy, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, oh crap, maybe I shouldn't have saved. Maybe I've got to start all over again.
Right.
You do the game often.
No, yeah, save state's helpful in those situations.
I mean, one of the chapters I think I really enjoyed was Defend. Defend is one of those ones where it actually puts some of that sort of tactical part into the game. I mean, sure, you could be over-leveled completely, but I remember a couple of chapters in 10. I mean, for all of the 10 did wrong, it did some of the chapters right. I think the Defend one at the end of Section 2, when you're in the castle, and there's just millions and millions of soldiers. You're like, oh, can I finally get rid of the boss? Or, I mean, there was a little bit of it in Awakening, that one chapter where you have to sort of like protect her, but then at the end you still got to kill everyone.
I like
the defend where it is like a siege, and like, okay, once you've hit turn 10, then it doesn't matter, like that's the end, and it's not necessarily a victory, it's just like, ah, survive, and that's a win in a different way. Like, I kind of like that difficulty.
Yeah, I think there was a kind of, I totally lost my train of thought there. Sorry. I think in a lot of the defense chapters throughout the series, they were almost like, yeah, it's a defense chapter, but you could totally just treat it as a route chapter and kill everybody anyway, because it's really, they're really bad, poor AI, and they're not much better than you are. And just, you know, take Hector, wreck everybody. That's all you really need to do. Yeah, but I mean, I kind of want to see some, like, really tough defense chapters where you got to be really strategic about your choke points. Make it totally not beneficial for you to go out and try to kill everybody like you could in defense chapters past.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's like one that it's some, like, sometimes they'll just throw, like, one curveball. You're just not expecting it. I mean, the 313 Archer would never have become that semi-meme if it hadn't been for the fact that people did find that chapter hard the first time round. There's, like, just one guy bailing your ass out.
Right. No, exactly. We also discussed on that podcast some, like, potential new chapter ideas. I don't know if you have any strokes of brilliance that you want to share with us regarding new chapter types.
I think it's difficult because you can say, I think there's a lot of like variations you can do with them. I think, but I don't think there's much in the way of novel ideas. I guess there's, I think one time you guys were talking about like an endless chapter where it was just more like a high score round, where you see how far you can get.
Yeah. I think I compared that. I guess Blazer and I kind of related it to maybe an end of game chapter if the game was darker and maybe there were characters at the end that were supposed to die after fighting a huge wave of soldiers, like kind of holding somebody off. I don't know if you played Halo Reach.
Yeah.
You did. Yeah. We compared it. I don't know if you remember. We compared it to the last chapter of Halo Reach, spoiler, where you play as Noble Six and that last chapter, I mean, last level, I guess, is just an endless.
Until you die.
Until you die. And it was a really cool level, actually. It was one of my favorite levels in that game.
I think it's also one of those things, like, even if it wasn't an end of the chapter thing, that could be one of those parts where they could throw into a trial map at the end or a DLC where it is, like, endless battle.
Yeah, and just see how far you go. And, I mean, with the with Nintendo adopting more internet capabilities in their games, we might be able to see, like, a high scoreboard.
Yeah, and, I mean, that would be fun. Or, like, with street passing on the 3DS would be just one of those things where, sure, he might lose his novelty after a while, but it'd be kind of fun when you go past. I mean, when I work, I'm in London, so 6 million people or whatever. You street pass tons of people every day. I mean, I've gone past a lot of people playing Fire Emblem, and if you did get little high scores or whatever, like, oh, I survived the 100 rounds, you're like, dude, who the hell did I just pass?
Wow, some Fire Emblem guru over there going 100 chapters.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's just one of those things which is kind of just doesn't do anything, but it's a neat feature, and people might like that. I feel maybe for a chapter, an escort chapter, without you being able to rescue them. Because I think it was in FE9 when you had that one when Ike is forced to hold on to whatever that...
Leanne.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that chapter was... that was, especially because that was like a four-part chapter, but that was one of those chapters where you were just like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, and you do get that sort of mental image of him kind of trying to bat people away with the sword or whatever, like
while he's like holding on to her and stuff. Yeah, that was. I remember that chapter very vividly. I remember I didn't like it at first because I hate forest chapters, but then once I kind of got my strategy down, it started to become cool.
Maybe a few like escort chapters or something like that. Just to, even just actually for the new ones, putting in some of the old chapter types a few more times, just to vary it up a little.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like we said, in Awakening, they only used much of one or two chapter types, and they weren't all that different from each other.
And I feel like that's one of those things that kind of kills a bit of the replayability for me.
Oh, yeah.
I can still play Fire Emblem 7, even though I've played it a few times, and you get to say, when you get to Burn, and you've got to like go protect the prince and stuff, and it kind of gets like a little bit, even though you can't necessarily die before you get there, you're going to got to like plan out your strategy and stuff, depending on who hasn't been messed over. And it just kind of like, that adds a bit of replayability, or like you get back to Cog of War, and you're like, oh, I've got a whole massive kill everyone map.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, well, on these it was, you know, just like, once you kill everyone on the map enough times, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. yeah, we've been going for quite a while now, and sad to say, we're going to have to wrap it up here. That was all the topics that that I plan on talking about today, so...
Yeah.
I mean, thanks for coming on the podcast, Beebaloos. I'm seriously considering allowing you to come on again. No,
GMT to work out.
Yeah. I kind of have to kind of work that out. Blazer's always busy, so you know, maybe you can fill in for him for one time next season if he's doing whatever it is that Blazer does. You know,
set things on fire. I don't know.
Probably.
Working pyrotechnics.
Honestly, I mean, I think he's a huge pyro, right? He just sets things on fire all the time. I'm glad I don't live in his state, because Smokey the Bear would be all over the place.
I'm glad I've got that whole ocean between.
Yeah, a lot of water, right? You know, you're lucky. I live on the same continent as that pyromaniac.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, that's been the podcast. We will catch you guys next season.